Thank you. Do you want to roll into what you were going to talk about now, or do you want me to ask a question, or do you want to just roll?
I can say a few things.
You can roll then.
We'll roll.
So
when Wayne talked about me doing this, it sort of got me thinking, I really appreciate the fact that you made me do that, because it sort of focused me and our little group on, you know, what we want to do with the trails. So I was away in Florida. I had to go to Florida because I'm that age, and in the winter. Yeah. So during that time, I had a chance to just to read a little bit. One of the things that I reread a bit of was the Little Prince by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. So I came up with a few quotes, and I'm a teacher, so I had to have a handout. So some of you have the handout, I didn't have quite enough. I came up with a few quotes that sort of struck me as what we'd like to do for the kids, or the space that we want to create for the kids, or at least the philosophy behind it. And one of them, like I say, is from Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. It says, "All grown-ups were once children, but only a few can remember it." So I'm one of the few that sometimes can remember it, and that's why we spend so much time in the woods. My group, we thoroughly enjoy being there. And we call ourselves kids playing in the woods. I mean, we're working very hard, but it doesn't feel like we're working. It's just the attitude that we want to bring to it. And if you have the sheets, I don't intend to read them all, but one of the other ones that I particularly like is from Hans Christian Andersen. It's from a poem called The Butterfly. What it says, "But just to keep alive is not enough. To live, you must have sunshine and freedom and a little flower to love." I think that characterizes what little kids bring to being in the woods. That's what I remember when we were kids. It's just being free and finding something to love in nature, noticing things in nature. So that's all I'll say.
So building on that was a good segue into the question that I have. What is the issue now? What's changed from when you were a kid? You're still a kid, but when you were like an actual kid. And I'll ask this to the other panelists too. Like, what's changed in our connection with the outdoors and our play? And maybe I'll start with Pat.
Oh, I thought sitting. I thought for sure sitting at this end got me out of the. I think probably the number one problem, and this is both from my own experience, but from other conversations I've had with folks around some research conversations. I feel like the number one problem is fear. Right? And I could distill it all down to fear, right? And it's this fear of injury. It's this fear of, it's a crazy world and some sort of guy's going to kidnap my kids and who knows what's going to happen. It's this fear that comes with what I think, I don't know how to politely put it, so I'll just put it like this. You know, we not helicopter parents, but we have snowplow parents, right? That try to move all things out of the way of their kids, right? Where it's like, everything is going to be perfect and everything is wonderful and you're the best thing since sliced bread and we can't possibly have you fall over and skin your knee and come home with some great big gash across your arm and dirty and we don't want you to get those nice UGG boots dirty and whatever else, right? It's this fear of so many things out there in the world that's just, I think, overwhelmed predominantly the parents, and that then affects how they parent, right? And what their kids get given the opportunity to do. Now we'll go this way.
Okay, so I'm going to jump on that. And so Clifford alluded to it this morning, and you know, we start to remove ourselves bit by bit from those wonderful opportunities to be out in nature and just explore and be kids and no time frame, no rules, and do our own thing. And I think the other piece that just to jump on board as well, what Pat said is parents feel like they have to prescribe. Parents feel like they have to schedule. Parents don't want their children to be bored. And so we have, you know, these cordoned off, lovely $80,000 batches of playground equipment that sit like little silos across the landscape. And I don't know if, who here has little kids? Who has children? So, you know.
Grandchildren count?
Yeah, absolutely. They were kids. You had kids then at some point, right?
Right.
Okay, so I tell this story often. My daughter, you know, the thing when she was little was Tickle Me Elmo. And God help us, we beat all the bushes trying to find one of these little giggly friggin' red beasts. Okay, so finally we found one. We had to go all the way to Halifax to get it, and we brought it back, and we were so excited for her to open it. And she looked at it, she squeezed it, it laughed once, and she let it go.
And then played with the box?
And then played with the box. And it's the same with the playground. It has one set of rules. It has one function. It has one purpose. Mm. So when children are in that environment, they get bored very quickly. They don't need that $80,000 worth of playground equipment. So you'll see the playground equipment sitting, you know, there's crickets around it, nobody's using it, and the icy field next door, the kids are just flying down that, doing what they want to do. And so back to the comment about fear, thanks for stealing all of that, all the world into one, but it is, it's about fear. And I think there's, you know, to get into more philosophical discussion, just to touch on it, is that we now have generations of people who never had that experience in their own childhood. They weren't little wild things out there playing in the mud and the muck and tasting God knows what and doing their own thing. So now they, you know, they parents, some will gauge their own success as parents by what they do for the children, versus sitting back and allowing the children to explore on their own. A friend of mine I work with, her son is just, he's phenomenal. He's 14. His latest adventure, if you will, was to tap their 100-year-old maple tree in the backyard. And so he bottled this sap for people, and it's labeled and the whole kit and caboodle. And I said, good on ya, like, that's awesome. I said, that's excellent parenting. She said, we just sit back and let him take us where he wants to go. Mm-hmm. And parents are very much afraid of that.
Yeah. Karen, can I just wanted to probe a little bit there, and what you're talking about, I'm wondering how that extends into the early childhood education sector. Is what's happened, you've been talking, everybody's been kind of focused on parenting, but has, mm-hmm. has that same kind of shift happened in the early childhood education sector, or?
Well, so then it's risk, right? Up the yin yang. You know, if you want a child to engage in risky play. I remember we had a group of educators in at the Marconi campus, and if anybody repeats this story, I'll say I didn't say it. But we had them out in the backyard making little fires. And a lot of the educators had no clue how to even come at that. So we're dealing with that generation that have not had those experiences, and how can we expect them to impart that knowledge or that joy to the children in their care if they know nothing of it? So there's that piece, and I think that lack of recognition of play as a valuable medium, as a conduit to learning, is something else that is missing in that sector. It sounds a bit like it's ironic, beyond ironic, but they don't recognize that we just need to take the children's lead and facilitate, versus, you know, the age-old adage that we have to fill the vessel. They don't know anything, and we have to give them all the tools to be successful, and that's just not the case.
Don't they know that play is how kids learn?
Well, you know what? They can all say it, right? They can all say it, but there's only a very small portion of them who believe it enough that they will allow that to be how they engage in their daily practice.
And especially believe it enough that they will let that happen with somebody else's kids.
Exactly.
Right? Because that's we're talking about the same age group, like whether we're talking parents or we're talking the educators, mm-hmm. there's this missing group who didn't necessarily do the outdoor messy eat dirt play, but it's at a different level when it's not your kids too, right? You're even less willing to take the risk to do something because of the what if.
And that's another level of fear, right?
Yeah.
So you're saying, I don't think there's it's an either or.
No.
Like I have three children, and two of them have children. Mm. So my lineage is dying out. But
you need 11 like Clifford.
Yeah, that's right. What I've all three kids were different.
Yeah.
They lived in the same home, they lived in the same environment, and they had the same accessibility to nature.
Yeah.
Because we live quite close to the woods, and my daughter, she just loved going out in the woods, and she would be gone. We didn't know exactly. She said she's playing in the backyard, but the backyard extended a long way, and there was a brook along in our backyard that we didn't know, but it was in our backyard spheres, and she and her friend were always in the woods, okay? The other young fella, he was more like into organized sort of activities. He liked doing all sorts of things in the woods, but he was playing street hockey. He was playing hockey. That was his sort of approach to things. My daughter's son, now he's only around four. Terrible thing to say, around four. because she's his mother, he is out in the woods. He plays in the woods. They live near a trail in Halifax by the Frog Pond. Familiar with that? They're there all the time. That's the kind of upbringing he's getting. My son's daughter is on an organized team. She plays hockey. She went to gymnastics. She does all of these sorts of things that my parents want to do. So there's no, it's no one or the other. It sort of depends very much on the parents that you have. But like I was a school principal, and I know all about the fear and liability and all that, and the reluctance of teachers to take kids outside because you shouldn't paint them all with the same brush. It's unfair to do that because they would like to do it, but it is so complicated to take kids outside. And talking about fear, just in general with kids, when I grew up, I lived on a hill, and it fed down towards where the school was, in the south end of Sydney. The kids flowed over the hill. There were so many kids. Streets were sidewalks were full of kids. So parents could let their kids go walk to school, and there was nothing to be concerned about because there were always so many kids.
There was safety in numbers.
There was safety, yeah. But now, we used to do these walking school buses to try to encourage, and we'd send teachers out to walk, to gather up the kids, and get volunteers to walk. It's very difficult, you know. And so in the neighborhoods, the kids are walking through empty streets. You know, it is a much different situation that we grew up in. That's all I'll say. There's no this or that about it. It's very, it's a complex thing.
It's very complex. Yeah.
And it's how the world's changed, right? Like
But part of it's what do you call it? Self-fulfilling
prophecy. Yeah.
If you don't send your kids out in numbers to walk to school, I lived in a school. I worked in a school where the kids. There was a bus going by their house, they put the kids on the bus. The kids could easily walk to school, but they wanted them on the bus. And because, okay, I'm going to work, you're on the bus, huh? Okay, you're taken care of, sort of thing. And if they could drive the kids into the hallway of the school and drop them off.
They would like a drive-through window.
They would have done it. You know, if you could open a door at both ends of the school. Yeah.
So what I kind of heard from what Karen was saying, related to what you were saying, is that now and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I just want to go into this a little bit more. Now in the ECE field itself, and probably in the education field as well, we're seeing the beginnings of the generations that grew up with less outdoor opportunities themselves. So that's
being the teachers,
the educators. Now, so they have, it's even more difficult now because they don't have the
experience,
familiarity, the experience themselves. And obviously there are exceptions like, Like there are always. There are some
and those young parents that are in, you know, there are some young people that are just taking this on. They want their kids out in, in nature. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
With probably more than ever before, just diagnosis of mental health at a young age, whether that's ADHD or you know, dyslexia or any, there's any number of things. How does that change our approach to facilitating outdoor play when it's needed more than ever? But is, I don't have a question.
It's okay. Think it through. It's all good.
I lost my train.
That's all right.
I can jump onto part of your chain of thought there.
So, yeah.
I mean, I think jumping onto part of your train of thought, George, is also about creating, it's about creating opportunities and not seeing things in silos, right? Like, this isn't just a problem for us to flog off onto the ECEs and the teachers, right? And it's also not something that we can just deal with as parents, right? There's got to be this, like, yes, our kids spend a lot of hours in the school system, right? And hopefully they get some cool opportunity to go outdoors. But then if they come home and they're in a lower socioeconomic situation and their parents are working all the time and they can't possibly take them out and they don't have access to a recreation program that also includes the outdoors, is not just schedule them to death in hockey, gymnastics, and this, like then we're sort of doing a disservice. So it's in, that's where it becomes this societal piece, right? And how do we break down some of the barriers around, we give this four-year-old a wonderful experience and they can come home and teach mom and dad, I learned how to build a fire behind my kindergarten or whatever. And that's a good thing, not a, you were going to send you to the principal's office, but cool, let's get mom and dad and older brother Tony to go and do this outdoor thing. And so we can encourage it from that ground up level, right? And have opportunities that don't just say outdoors stuff is not for school or outdoor stuff is for only in the school, right? But it's a holistic piece. And I don't want to steal any thunder from Brit's Norway talks, but you know, this is somewhat, I don't want to say it's only a North American problem, but it's largely a North American problem because there's other Western cultures that, you know, they see this in a very holistic way, right?
And then when you talk about anxiety and those things that young people are struggling with, it's mind-boggling and very sad, actually, that the ages we see young children present with these different mental scenarios. But children need to learn these skills. Children need to learn to self-regulate. Children need to learn their boundaries. Children need to learn that things aren't always going to go the right way. Shit's going to happen, but you can pick yourself up and dust yourself off. And so if we don't give them the opportunities to do that, and something really horrendous comes down the pipe, they get nothing. They get nothing in their toolkits to help them manage those situations. So when you get the helicopter or the snow plower or the whatever term you want to use for, whether it be parents or I will say caregivers in general, we think we're doing what's best. But I think these conversations that we're seeing, you know, that famous pendulum effect. Now we're starting to see that pendulum come back a bit. And we're starting to see, hopefully, we're recognizing these things. And the layers of it, as Pat said, are unbelievably complex. Let's take it to the next conversation about childhood obesity. You know, there was a study put out by a professor in University of Ottawa in the early 90s. No, 2009, maybe 2007. And he did a comparison of a 12-year-old in 1981 to 2007 or whatever the time frame is. Don't hold me to that. That's loose. But, you know, a 12-year-old in 2007 is rounder, has more anxiety, is less capable aerobically, and on and on and on. So we're seeing these things. And some educators, just like some children, have no affinity for the outdoors. And that's okay, but for no other reason than to recognize that this has to have a role, our activity level has to have a role in people's well-being, whether you're the caregiver or the caregivee, if you will.
I was thinking as you were talking, then I forgot what I was going to say. And I know what I was going to say. One of the things I was thinking about a lot when we're trying to decide what I might say to a group like this is how do you organize unstructured play? It's like
put the block there.
Yeah, how does that work? Yeah, I tell you about an activity that I'm developing. If you don't mind.
No.
Wayne and I are working on a project called the Washbrook Greenway, and the concept is to create a path. I don't know if you're familiar with Sydney, but to create a path that would lead from the boardwalk through Wentworth Park up through some streets in Sydney to a spot where we can connect with the Washbrook. Near where the old city hospital used to be. And for about a kilometer or so, you can walk along the Washbrook through sports fields, past schools, up to the Baylor Trails. And then there's the system. So just so happens that there are two schools along that path. An elementary school, P to 5, they call it now, and the other, a middle school, Brookland and Sherwood Park. And both schools have bought into, at one level or another, hopefully deeply, into the idea of outdoor education and natural education with a natural bent to it. So we were pretty excited about that, the potential. So I've been flogging this for a lot of years in different schools and with different levels of success. It's not an easy thing to do to get people, teachers, out of the classroom because they have liability concerns. They have reasons why it's safer inside the classroom. So, but they're buying into it. At Brooklyn, the school, that area that used to be the South End Community Center has now become the South in Community Gardens. Thank you very much, Wayne, in his group. So the principal has arranged it so that the kids, that area is part of the school ground. So you don't have to fill out applications to go out, you don't have all these liability, all these, those paperwork, you don't, if you're doing something and you say, oh gee, I could do something as a follow-up outside, or I'd like to get the kids ready to do this activity. I could do it outside and then bring it inside. All they have to do is walk out the door. It's right there. And the same thing with Sherwood Park. BLR trails are right next to Sherwood Park. So that's considered part of their school grounds. They don't need the permission slip and all of that. They can walk out, do the activity, come back in. Some of them still aren't inclined to do it. But to be brief with this, So we're trying to develop activities create an environment that kids can go out either with a class or with their parents or maybe they're a little older by themselves and go up and have fun in the woods. But one of the things I hope you could help me with, we're not quite sure what to do. So I've been involved with kids a lot, but still, it's hard to know how to structure and how to organize an unstructured play activity. So what I did is I approached the grade fours because they're at an age where they are a little bit more articulate. They can write. All kids can draw, but they're getting a little bit better skills. And so I'm going to take their teachers up to the trail. And ask them to go and imagine what little kids would like to do on the trail. Mm-hmm. And they're going to help us come up with some ideas. Mm-hmm. Now the teacher in me comes out because that's that's an authentic experience for a whole language. Mm. Yeah.
Some of the participants here today were all nodding our heads.
Yeah.
So we just did a workshop called Reconnecting with Nature, and that is available through Hike Nova Scotia, and there are trainers across the province who can train. We actually do a lot of work with ECs and schools, so there are people who can teach you a whole system of activities and ways to create engaging experiences in nature specifically for children. So I'd love to tell you more about that if you want to talk later.
Sure, thank you.
I think one of the things that pops up for me immediately when you were talking, David, and like I think Brooklyn's a great space, so I used to live in the neighborhood, so I know Brooklyn School. And what was always striking to me was just some of the systemic issues around letting people connect with the nature, particularly there, because there was, you know, it's got a wonderful schoolyard, right? I'd go down there with my son who was like 3 years old, didn't go to school at that point, but like we could play on the busted up basketball courts with no nets on them, or we could play on the fancy $50,000 plastic structure. But there's a lovely outdoor amphitheater there, big padlock on it, right? So like the outdoors, the real nature piece was segregated from the school. And I find the same thing happens at Cape Breton University. We bring every grade 4 student on Cape Breton Island gets to come out and do a program called Youth in Motion. And so we chose grade 4s because that's the age where kids either stay active or they fall off the table. So we bring every single grade 4 student out to CBU to do physical activity related things. And my classes are involved in running the outdoor programs. And the number one problem that we have out there is it's wonderful if we wanted to play soccer or we wanted to run indoor programs, but they built a chain link fence across the start of the trail. So we can't even access the trail that was built and made by a whole team of volunteers because somebody in their wisdom built a chain link fence across the access. So it's these systemic things where A doesn't talk to B, the left hand and the right hand don't know what each other's doing.
But we have a different situation now.
And that's great.
They're opening up those kids. Yeah. I was the principal when we built the center.
It's fantastic.
The next principal put a lock on it.
Yeah.
So it's being opened up again.
That's good.
And the thing David was talking about is both schools now, it's not just that they can go out anytime. They can go out anytime because the principals at the school have gotten a generic permission slip at the beginning of the year that only needs to be signed once.
Yeah.
Instead of every time they have to go out having to get a field trip permission slip signed, which is a bit of a policy change. That's
a big policy change.
Yeah. And Richard has a question, I think. Or
just wanted to add because I used to be a teacher as well, and I taught various grades, and the kindergartens that I taught, some of the activities I did was treasure hunting. You know, I just plant serpentine all along the schoolyard, and I'm lucky that the schoolyard has some forested areas in the ends of the yard. So I did some small activities like that, you know, just to take them out every now and then outside, right, as opposed to just being in the classroom. But I also was fortunate enough to teach another grade, different years. It was high-risk students, and it was grade 9 alternate program. And these students, you know, they were pretty tough students. You know, they're doing, some of them were doing jail time during weekends and, you know, probation, and they had just troubled lives. But yet they're, you know, they were coming to school, and it was very difficult at first to connect with them because, like I said, these students have a lot of difficulties in their lives and whatnot. And but one of the things I did with them, same thing, I took them in. I was lucky that that school had a wooded area as well. So I would take them on hikes, just not long hikes, just literally in the yard, but just a few feet into the wooded area. And I would explain things, I would research and do some things that I know, that just teaching about nature, you know, how you would survive in the woods and how you can tell the direction and, you know, like certain things that I knew at that time, I would show them, or whatever was linked to the lesson plans that were in. So what ended up happening is because they're so used to a classroom setting, which wasn't quite working, because we were doing other interactive stuff, they just became more comfortable and more enjoying school a little bit better. And between me as a teacher and the students, we had such a better, closer bond. And all the other teachers would always have to rely on me when they changed the classes, because a fight broke out or something. I'm the one who had to come in and then break up the fight. And they just respected me and treated me different as opposed to a teacher. They treated me almost like a friend, you know? So just taking them out in nature, you know, it's tough. And a lot of schools, especially in rural areas, they may not have access to such wooded areas. Even though all you would need is just a tiny patch in your school yard when you connect to it. But the last example is immersion school in Eskasoni. It has grades primary to grade 4 or 5. And one of the activities they did, which my program helped to provide with that school, is they would bring somebody in to do an outdoor activity. So sometimes we'd bring an elder in, and then right there in the schoolyard, even though there's no wooded area, he'd bring his own supplies right there in the corner, edge of the schoolyard. They would make a fire, and then they would roast some fish that the elder caught, and they would roast them right there on the fire. And all the kids, you know, they would try, and they would just participate in that activity. So even though some kids can't have access to, you know, such areas, sometimes they can bring it to them, you know. Yeah. And that's just an example of bringing something to them.
Great, thank you, Richard. Mm-hmm. So we've kind of moved into the third area of the panel, and that's around, because people have been suggesting things already. What can we do as a sector to tackle the problem and create more opportunities for children and families to be active in the outdoors? So we've heard some examples already, so open it up to the panel. Like, what are some things we can do as a sector or as a society, because it sounds like from what we're talking about, it's a societal problem. So what can we do to change the conditions? What can we do to structure unstructured play? How can we create the conditions to make that happen?
Well, you have a different perspective on it than me. Right now, I'm looking at it as somebody who's part of a group that's developing a trail, getting involved with schools in the process. But right now, I'm thinking, I'm hoping that you might be able to help me with some ideas, and just the way those grade fours, maybe will help me with some ideas. But the gentleman used one word there, so activity. It's whatever the kids have, they seem to tie or get excited about some sort of a process and activity rather than a piece of equipment. So if you can suggest something that they want to do, I guess. And what we're doing right now is we've got a grant from the provincial government through the community accessibility program to redo some of our bridges, and the idea being that we want parents with those strollers to be able to have easy access to the trails. So we're lowering some bridges and improving them. And we also want adults, because I think that we're focused on kids, but we've got these two bumps in the ends of our demographic group, some little kids, but a lot of older people too. And the word got out that we're doing that, it's just wonderful what I've been hearing from adults, how excited they are. You know, somebody in a wheelchair, someone who has difficulty moving, excited that they can get back into a natural place, because they have been denied that because of infirmity that they might have. So we're after both ends of it. So provide facilities that I would say that, and improve facilities that do present the possibility of having that natural experience, and then think about how you could get the kids' imagination going, so that when they go in and you can talk about fairy stories, and Janet Barlow knows about writing stories, and those are the sorts of things that if you sort of build that into your spaces, that make the spaces so much more appealing and create an experience that kids can build on.
I think, you know, relationship building is a conversation that needs to be had with this topic as well. Pat alluded to the fact that there are some families who have more barriers facing them than others. As educators or caregivers or whatever role you may have in a young family's life, you have to know where people are so you can go where they stand now to help them get to where we know is maybe a healthier place. And so if we don't know the families of the children in our care, we're never going to create those realistic goals. We're never going to be able to provide them with realistic tools that they can take back and implement at home. We're never going to be able to look at the outdoors as an extension of our typical learning environment. People in Cape Breton are really great at, you know, as soon as the snow has gone off the deck, we immediately know how to utilize the patio as additional living space. But it's a real slog to get educators to appreciate the fact that the outdoors is a natural extension to the classroom, whatever that classroom age group may be. And then there's the whole policy conversation. So where are we? Where do we need to go? That's a slog and it's a push, but I think that while we're having those big difficult conversations over here, there are things on the ground we're still able to accomplish. And there are some things that have come through policy that at first seem like, wow, what an asshole move that is. What do you mean the pre-primary kids can't go out on the playground that the school age kids use? Well, so my first reaction was just that, like, come on, really? But you know what? It was probably one of the best things that could ever happen. Mm-hmm. Because you can't have little children out running amok on the street. And so you better bloody well know how you're going to engage them. And that's going to challenge you as their caregiver to provide them with more meaningful opportunities. It's going to make sure that you're working with them in smaller groups and you develop that friendship that Buddy's talking about, that respectful friendship, so they trust you to lead them where they need to go, and you know, not just throw them out in the playground and leave them be. So I think that relationships have to play an integral role here.
And I think from my perspective, it's really about making this inclusive culture around the outdoors, so that it's not like there's nature and there's culture, but nature is the home of culture and they're all interconnected, right? We're really good here in, you know, Canada, North America, right? Okay, that's the wilderness and here's your park and that's where you do that. And you can't possibly do that over here or in your backyard. You only do outdoor education when you go to some fancy rich outdoor education center, not in your lower socioeconomic demographic schoolyard, right? And I think we just have to think through some of these inclusivity pieces. And it's not like Clifford was joking about they have to have the Patagonia gear or the Columbia gear and, you know, just clothed to the nines, but what's the lowest common denominator? What do you actually need to be comfortable and out there? And so at least in some of the pre-primary programs, you know, they've got class sets of muddy buddies so that all the kids are on equal footing. You're going to get dirty, there you go, right? And what I see it with our Youth in Motion program at Cape Breton University, if they said, we've got $10,000 for you, Pat, and we're going to give you this money in order to go and do something for your program, what am I going to do? I'm going to buy as many sets of rain boots and raincoats as I possibly can. Because the number one barrier for students to come and be involved there is they showed up to school and then they show up at CBU to do this Youth in Motion program with like flip-flops or sneakers in the middle of winter or like all of these things. And it's not because they're too cool. It's because they just don't even have it. They don't even have a winter coat. They don't even have whatever they need. So of course they're not getting into the outdoors.
Yes?
Maybe to chime in on that and the question when we were talking about, like, how do we bring structure into unstructured play? And speaking from just my personal experience, the past 4 years I've been really involved with any Trailblazers programs across the province. I'm sure a lot of you have heard about it, predominantly in the valley as well as the South Shore. But this is just a quick story to maybe represent how it was a personal challenge for me to transition that the kids are the experts. I'm here to learn from them. They kind of control the story in the space. and they'll come to you for a skill they might want to learn, like whether I start building a fire, if they ask what I'm doing, then we can teach it instead of like, this is what we're doing today. But one thing too is like to give the power back to the kids. So a leader of mine, her name was Julia, and we worked together out in the woods, and one thing we did one day, so we had a group of 10-year-olds, and we were noticing that like problem solving was something, if they had confrontation, it took them a really long time to figure things out. So like, okay, let's put them in a situation where they have to be confrontational and problem solve. So what we did is we showed up and we were totally blindfolded. And we said, you know, like, kind of sucks, like Julia and I, we got this like weird stuff in our eyes and we have to wear these bandages, but we all have to get to the forts today. And the forts are like probably a 2K hike into the woods. And so Julia and I, my leader, we were totally blindfolded and we had 10-year-olds lead us to the forts in the woods, blindfolded the whole time. I'm kind of terrified. The space is like gorgeous everywhere, rivers everywhere, rocks everywhere. And at one point, one of the kids, of course, they're not telling you there's millions of roots in front of your feet, tripped and fell and I cut my hand. And so my hand was bleeding, but I couldn't see it. And one of the kids is like, your hand's bleeding. He's like, okay, I can't see the first aid kit. They're like, what do you mean? And so we had to talk to them. They're getting the first aid kit and like bandaging my hand without me seeing it. And then further on, some of the kids brought in imagination. And one of them was like, there's a snowstorm. And instead of being adults being, oh, it's fall, there's no snow coming, if that's on us to be like, oh my gosh, I feel the snow, like it's coming. And then it's like, my extra coat's in my bag, I need my extra coat. And the kids are like, okay, the extra coat. And just playing into their space that they're already creating without us putting the walls of like, no, it's fall, here we are. The kids got us there. It took us about an hour, what normally would take us 20 minutes, but they had spaces of like, we're going this way, we're going that way. And Julie and I just didn't say anything. We were blindfolded and getting bandaged the whole time. So I think it's just, oh, being outdoors is vulnerable, and being leaders is vulnerable, and being with kids is vulnerable. Nature is raw and vulnerable. So I think it's just putting ourselves in those spaces to allow the kids to teach us everything they already know, and just being there. The word facilitator was really good that you brought up, and just willing to be that and know that even though we may have a lot of skills, we're not always the experts, like with kids, that they're generally the ones who know everything we don't. Yeah.
Thank you.
One of the things when we're talking about schools, like our company's done a lot of almost like crisis intervention, where we hear about a new school development. I don't work for anybody, so I don't really care. And I'll go, I'd like to have a look at the plans of the school. And they're like, well, I don't think we'll share it with you, so I'll call up Karen and I'll figure it out. And there's a lot of opportunities where you're like removing those barriers, providing those gates, gateways to trails, gateways to the woods. We've actually moved fences to incorporate a quarter acre of woods. Little things like that that you could all do, but you have to be aware of what's going on, when it's going on. Don't be afraid to make a call and act, because they're not thinking about that. And it's not their fault. They're just done that way. Everything has boxes and has to fit. So like what's happening in Cape Breton, it's amazing. If there's opportunities that can be shared through other school board systems, they'll go, oh no, we can't do that. Well, yes, you can. It's happening. And there's a lot of places that have tremendous opportunity right now that just needs a gate or just needs to be moved so the kids don't have to be bused. And there's probably 60% of the schools out there have those opportunities. But it's leaders like, you know, what's happening in Cape Breton to show that. But if you can catch it when they're developing and designing, even locating the schools, and somehow have folks like yourselves trained to think that way and be part of that, and that's probably comes back to policy. I don't know how you get there. But they're not there at the table when you're reviewing the classrooms and the green space. There's no one there with that community lens sitting there right now. They're just not. And so that's, I don't know how you, it's not an inspiring story, but it's important because all these kids go through those schools. If you can get that gate open or move that fence or somehow sit on that,
we just cut ours with
when they're developing their plans, it could, you know, fix a lot of the problems, I think.
Can I talk a little bit about partnerships?
You can talk about whatever you like.
Okay. you
really?
Folks, a lot of you are
really?
No.
How many of you are in the public sector? You work in the public sector, and you help provide services for people like us who have trails that we want to use properly. I have been very, very fortunate, our group has been very fortunate to have people like Charlotte and Ashley help us out and with the trails and be open to us. And I can't stress enough that, like, we talk about relationships, the importance of developing relationships, and for you to reach out to groups and make those relationships too, because we can't do everything. We can do something, and we have some successes, but boy, is it ever important that the support is there for us. And while I'm doing it, I want to advertise.
You want us to hold up your signs? Yeah.
Well, actually, Charlotte, help us. What was the young fellow's name? Gillis or?
Ian.
Ian. Okay, so the issue with us is that we can't just leave those in the woods because they're in the woods. And they're just as much as they're kids who can develop. But they're a theme. Right? So it represents a theme. This theme I especially like is the reflecting pond, because we have some little standing areas of standing water, and the reflections in those in that standing water, it's just absolutely breathtaking. If you get down, you can look in the pond and see forever. And there's all sorts of stuff. It's just an avenue into imagination. So Charlotte helped us. What's the name again? Ian?
Liam.
Yeah. He was great, and Charlotte was great to support him and provided the money for us to build these. So what we're going to do is to lay them, figure out a way that we can bring them out when a group comes, rather than just leaving them there. But that's part of the organizing an unstructured activity, because the nature of this idea of, you know, look into the pond, what happens when you throw something in the pond, that sort of stuff.
Could you say again why you've decided not to leave them out on the trail?
Well, our experience has been that things get vandalized.
Okay.
Yeah, and we have limited resources, and we hate to.
How do you use them then?
Well, this is where you bring the kids up and you present the activity to them, but then you can take them away, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think there's a further partnership in there, because Liam was a student in my program, right? And so that was a piece of this partnership as well. And the bigger partnership relationship piece is exactly why there's a Nova Scotia Outdoor Network, right? Why there's an Unamagi Cape Breton Outdoor Network, right? Is to connect those dots that may otherwise be the disparate pieces that never gets in the room, right? The
silos, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of my takeaway from this conversation, is how important of a role we play as people that connect with nature, that we're making sure to put forward and connect others with nature as well, because the role modeling those behaviors and being leaders is a really important part of people's experiences connecting.
Awesome. Thank you.
I just want to add to that, because I just came from a conference in the mental wellness forum, and discussed a lot about mental health and stuff like that across First Nation communities across Canada. And one of the biggest things that was talked about is on how to help people that are suffering from mental illness and trying to obtain mental wellness. Everybody and everything was pointing more and more towards the land-based activities, land-based connections. And so one of the biggest things they're doing out west, more so in Alberta and Manitoba areas, and it's we're starting to try something around here as well, but the biggest thing they keep talking about is land-based institutes. And what that means is they're going to pool some people are pooling all resources and all knowledge keepers and organizations in a central spot. And then when other outside organizations want to start something, let's just say a camp, you come to this institute, so to speak, they call it an institute, and you can pick your resources, whoever you need, you know? And then and whatever activities or events or whatever it may be, or just knowledge, you just want to access some knowledge, where to go, how to go. See, we got all these connections here and many more that we don't even know about, but we're all disconnected in some ways. You know, we're trying to connect here, but still we're not really connected. So it'd be nice to have something similar, like a institute that everybody pools everything together and easy access, right?
Yes.
Just a
great idea.
Just want to share.
Thank you. We're actually at the end of the time for the panel.
Thank God.
I want to thank the panelists for the very interesting discussion and all the participants as well. Just want to say, earlier I was going to make a joke about how on the first panel there were two Cape Bretoners on either side and a mainlander in the middle, and that we were going to structure all our panels like that, but then I realized that we have all Cape Bretoners on this one, so just wanted to say that it wasn't intentional. Pat wasn't supposed to be here, so.
Yeah.
We had a mainlander scheduled to be in the middle, but she didn't show up, so.
Those mainlanders.
Those mainlanders, so unreliable.
Can't take them anywhere.
So, just wanted to, we're going to move right into our two outdoor sessions now. So we have, Britt is here. Where's Britt? She's over there, actually. Not here. Alicia's here. Yeah. So Britt's going to be taking a group out, and Alicia is going to be taking a group out as well. So we'll just roll right into that. Do one of you want to like take the group first so we can separate?
Yeah, I can do it.
Who's doing which? Who's doing which one?
Which group is which?
So mine's with the Bring Storytelling into Environmental Education.
Yeah. So Alicia's is Outdoor Earth Education. How we might bring creative storytelling into education based play. If anyone is going, Alicia.
Did you still need those?
We'll be okay. It's okay. Not raining.